Well, dear friends, thank you very much for attending this evening's seminar, Africa Now. My name is Paul Trøtman Olerud, and I'm the director of the Norwegian Council for Africa. And Africa Now is our monthly seminar. We are talking about current affairs from the African continent and African-related issues. This evening, we're going to talk about Norwegian fishing vessels on the coast of Western Africa. And Erik will talk a bit more about the report that we have just released. Just some short notes before handing the words further. There will be an opening for questions and general comments on the conversation afterwards, but please take them after the panel. And the conversation will be led by Ingrid Rostad from Forum. And I think this will be a quite interesting evening for all of us. So if you'll take it any further, Erik.
Thank you. So my name is Erik Hagen. I'm the director of the Norwegian Support Committee for Western Sahara. We're doing this report in a nice little cooperation between our two associations and the Naturvernforbundet, the Norwegian Society of Conservation, is it? So a partnership between an organization working on the environment, one on the continent, and our association working on this very specific country or conflict. Just to say very, very quickly, Western Sahara that I'm working with is the last remaining colony in Africa, according to the United Nations. It is illegally under occupation by Morocco, and there's a consensus among the political parties of Norway regarding the conflict, which means it's possible to address other large international affairs issues without being disturbed by conflict lines in the policies. It means that when we meet with youth politicians or politicians, we can address international affairs agreeing on the concept, on what basis we are discussing. So the idea of this report is, it's a topic that that is almost never covered in the media, in the political institutions. It's seemingly something that is not discussed in the business sector, in the fishing community. So we're trying to set an agenda on a topic that's not been covered so far. I think there's been a lot of coverage on what happens to the large vessels, the bulk vessels, cruise ships, army vessels that are dumped on the beaches of India and Bangladesh with the following environmental concerns and labor rights concerns. And the business has tried to cover that. The Norwegian Ship Owners Association and the large shipping companies have some sort of policy on this issue now after decades of campaigning from civil society. But this is a something similar topic on what happens to the old Norwegian fishing vessels. The world economy is a weird thing. One political decision in Norway might affect the food security in Africa. There's a chain. The report argues there are consequences when Norway in the 90s, 2000s decide to change the quota system of the Norwegian fishing industry. We suddenly have an excess of fishing vessels. They end up in Africa and hence in conflict with local fishermen and local food security. So orsak virkning. There's a causality, right? There's causal effect between what's happening in Norway on policies and what happens on the ground in Africa as a consequence of that. So basically, that's what we're just here to say hello and welcome, and we'll leave the floor to the panelists, and Ingrid will guide us through. First, before we get to that point, of course, first we will have the basic report introduction first. The report is written by Per-Erik Schultz from the Nature Conservation Society of Conservation. So he's written the report, you will go through the methodology and the findings. So we leave the floor to you.
Thanks. I'll make this a brief little presentation with some slides. And everything is in the report, but there is also some additional materials that it will be interesting for every one of us to dive into a bit more, I guess. When I got this task from Erik, I was quite happy because I'm always curious, and it's interesting to try to connect the dots on something that is there, but we don't really know that much about it. And I'm a marine biologist. I worked in the Nature Conservation Society for like 25 years. Some of my colleagues have worked a lot on illegal and unreported fishery issues globally. And they have also been tracking vessels. But then, like 10, 15 years ago, they had to do this manually, you know, travel around the world with a camera, and go in the harbors and find the vessels. But these days, as I will show you briefly, we have other tools which makes this possible. So, of course, why fishing is interested, and I love fish, of course. It's important in Norway. We are a country with a big coast. We know why fish is important. And it's the same everywhere. But in particular in Western Africa, because, I mean, you have the ocean currents makes it happen that it's one of the richest fishing grounds in the world. There's upwelling of nutrient-rich cold waters coming up on this coast, just like on the Western Americas. And you have a lot of plankton bloom and zooplankton feeding the whole food chain with a lot of pelagic fish stocks like mackerel and sardines and this kind of fish. And of course, then feeding people and seabirds and sea mammals and big fish and so on. So it's very important. The fishery is very important, of course, for the local economy, the local community. And it has attracted then also some of the biggest fishing companies in the world. And the big industrial fishing fleet. And without going too much into this, I mean, it's the general story. When people started and industrial fishing, industrial trawling and so on, like 100 years ago, they thought the ocean was just to grab whatever you wanted out of it, it would just refill automatically. You could not deplete the fish stocks. But with the modern technology fishing methods, we have shown repeatedly that we are able to fish it empty. And if you look like concrete on the fish stocks outside Africa, many of them are heavily overfished. And some of them are maybe not overfished yet, but they are balancing. And with the if we introduce a huge fishing capacity of foreign vessels, of course the risk increases that it will maybe not be enough fish left. When Erik asked me to look a bit into this, he presented his Greenpeace report from 2013. I think it was also part of some kind of Swedish-Norwegian Brennpunkt program. No. Same research, and it was this period where the digging journalists looked a bit into these issues, of course, because of Western Sahara issues, and maybe it was something about fish meal going into our fish farms, but from not so good fisheries. And in this context, they found some vessels from Europe, old fishing vessels that now were fishing outside Western Africa. And of these, there was 6 Norwegian vessels. And that was like the starting point. And now it's, I mean, it's 10 years later. We wanted to check what we can find now. Is there still those six vessels fishing? And what has happened since 2013? And we know, we have some stories about these vessels. I guess like every time you want to do business in a foreign country, there are some kind of ethical issues you have to consider. And like this is an example of this, one of these Norwegian fishing vessels we knew about in 2013, right? And it's a photo, they are dumping fish. If this was in Norway, it would be illegal, completely illegal. You have to bring all the catch to shore, right? But this is what happens, and it's of course a great spill of or waste of resources. So already we can see there are some issues with this fish vessel export. Okay, what we did. The Norwegian ship register by Sjøfartsdirektoratet is fantastic. It's open. We can get access to all the vessels registered, but also all vessels deleted from the ship register through all these years. But in the public online portal, you have to search for one and one vessel at a time. So what we did, we approached Sjøfartsdirektoratet, the coastal authorities, and asked for the full data set of all Norwegian vessels sent out of the country, reflagged to another country from 2000 until today. And we got it. Okay, but that was like, as far as I remember, something like 5,000 vessels or something. That's quite something to sort out. So we applied some filters. We were looking for fishing vessels, of course. We thought we go for the larger fishing vessels, not the small ones. And we had to remove all the vessels that were kind of dead, that were out of the system. And then we ended up with 280 fishing vessels, quite big fishing vessels, exported from Norway through these last 20-something years. And they are flagged to various countries. I don't know if you can see this, but I read a bit for you. We found that more than 30 of these vessels were sent to Russian, maybe owners, we don't know, but the flag changed from Norway to Russia. Faroes, Iceland, Denmark, I mean, that's all our like neighbor countries with a good reputation, maybe on fisheries. But then something turned up here, Belize, what is that? And we see Mauritania, Australia, Morocco, Netherlands, Angola, Namibia. You see, they are spread out on a lot of different flags. Also some kind of peculiar ones, which is more like very obviously flags of convenience, like some very little Pacific state. Okay, so that was it. But how to figure out if any of these were fishing outside Western Africa? And that's when this new fantastic tool, at least I like it, I like this kind of digging for information activity, is something called Global Fishing Watch. And I discussed a bit with the guy who's joining us in the panel here, Tor. Because earlier, these data on the fishing vessel movements, the governments and the coastal authorities had access to those. But now these are more and more out in the public. And someone has built quite strong analysis tools, open maps, where everyone, like you and me, can go and check any fishing vessel in the world who has had this kind of tracking, and where the information is gathered into this database. So I just show you briefly. I mean, this is the concept. There are to be some tracker on board many of the vessels. I mean, you don't have to have it. You have to have it. You have it. He will tell more about it. Okay, so that's a good starting point. And then you have satellite tracking, but also some onshore tracking possibilities. And you could these days also add, you can do radar, you can do satellites looking for lights of the vessels and so on. So you have a quite big surveillance of the seas potential, actually. And this Global Fishing Watch website, they have this slogan, sustainability through transparency. So the idea is by making all these vessels visible, so anyone interested can look into what they're doing, they will maybe start to follow the rules and follow the quotas and so on. We'll see. And this was some years ago, and here you see they say we have 70,000 fishing vessels in this map. And this yellow is in the places in the world where it's most fishing. And you see Western Africa, there's a lot of fishing just very near the coast, actually. This is where these upwelling resources are. Okay, so I found it was still quite a lot of boats. I mean, 280 vessels, and I was to look at each one of those and try to figure out if there have been outside Africa. So I kind of sorted them in groups. So let's look at the Russian ones first, for example. And we see where have they been fishing. This is what this open map is telling us. They have been fishing in the North Sea, in the Barents Sea, also a bit outside Russia, I mean in the China-Japan seas and over there. But that's it. All of them, they're kind of fishing in these seas. And we found the same with Icelandic boats, Faroe boats, Greenland boats. They were all fishing like in quite predictable areas. Okay, but then we can look into, for example, Belize. And I don't know much about fishing on the high seas and which flags are the worst and not. But as soon as you start to read a bit and Google a bit, Belize is one of these, I would call it a bit dodgy flags. Someone might flag there if they want to do some fishing that they don't want Norwegian government to or coastal authorities to follow, for example. And when we plot these boats and see where they have been, you see, there's something here. Okay, there's one vessel fishing outside, what is that? Canada waters. And there are two in Latin America. And they have been a bit in Norway and maybe Netherlands, but then they have gone down here. And we can zoom in. And we see they fish a lot outside Western Sahara and along this coast. So these are the names of the Norwegian vessels, and then sooner or later they changed their names, and we can follow them. So that's it. And we did this exercise with all these 280 vessels, and we ended up with 47 vessels, and you can find this list in the report, which is, of course, a lot more than six vessels that we knew about from before. It's quite a lot, actually. And Tor can maybe also tell a bit what kind of capacity these boats have. But they are not small fishing vessels. They are like medium size and some even quite big vessels. And of course, if they fish all the time, they can really fish a lot. That's my general estimate. So I just wanted to point out here, because everything is in the report and also these links, but there are two of these additional materials. We have made a map, which is a map where you can kind of, you can choose which boat you want to look at among these 47, and you can see yourself where they have been and what they have been doing. And we also have a list with all these boats with more details than you find in the report. And it's out in the open. There you can also see which home harbors in Norway these boats had before they were flagged to other countries and ended up in Africa. And you see, there's quite a lot of them from Bergen. I don't really know why. If it's that many fishing boats in Bergen, or if it's someone in Bergen who has made some special business out of this, that's maybe what I suspect, but I don't know. And I just, for the last slides, I want to show like the real power of this tool. And I guess if you are in the Coast Guard or in the fishery directorate, I mean, you also have like satellites. So you don't only have track this kind of tracking, but you also have like live satellites. You can see the boats, what they are doing, if you want to. or aerial surveillance. But look at this. This is outside Dakhla. Is that the right pronunciation? That's Western Sahara, right? And these are just tracks from former Norwegian fishing vessels over the last few years. And to me, it seems like they have been quite active. Really quite active. And we can zoom in, and we see they have covered about all the seabed many times. And there was another reason I wanted to show you this, because if you see here in this global fishing watch, you see this bottom line. That's actually like the timeline for each of these vessels. You see that's the green timeline, that's the green vessel. So you can see it has been active since 2013. At least they have data in the database, and it's active all the time through. But you see back in 2013, it was only three vessels that were active. And then some more has arrived of these Norwegian vessels. And that's exactly the same as we see. If you look at these 47 fishing vessels, this was when Greenpeace had their report, and we got to know about this. But most of the vessels has been exported after that, actually. After someone started to ask about if this is really ethical and sustainable and right. We have two example cases in the report where we actually name the companies owning the vessels and so on. This is a vessel from one of these examples. And it's just to show that if you pick a certain vessel, you can zoom in and see what it has been doing. You can see the harbors it has been visiting. You can see also this is transshipments. The data analysis tools automatically discovers when it has been close to another vessel for quite some hours. And they think that is when something has happened, of course. We can see that this particular vessel, if this is really the border between Western Sahara and the neighbor country, this vessel has been fishing a lot in the other country, but it has had some trips into Western Saharan waters. I don't know why. I don't know if they have a quota there, but we can see it happened. We can see when they fished, like this was in 2014. We can see they had the transshipment to this bigger ship, Ocean Fresh, which is a freezer boat, still Norwegian flagged. And we can see the same freezer ship met another boat called Tasia Z, which is a name very similar to Tasia Z, which was the other one. And that was new for me. So we can plot this boat as well. And we can see they fish together and they're delivering to the same freezer ship. And if we look into marine traffic, this maritime intelligence tool, we get some data. They think they have a picture of this boat, Dazia Z. And we can see it's actually Tasia Z. They have different what you call EMO numbers, MMMS, SI numbers, different names. I have no clue why they have changed these names back and forth, but it shows kind of the strength of this analysis tool, but also that you have to actually look closely at what vessels you are talking about, because there are many options for changing names and changing flags and trying to avoid someone understanding what's happening. Here you see the flags of these vessels today, these 47 vessels. Most of them are flagged now in Morocco, and then Mauritania, and then Belize. And fishing outside Western Africa. And that's our report, and I look forward to some chat about this. That was what I had.
Thank you very much. My name is Ingrid Rosta. I'm a senior policy advisor at the Norwegian Forum for Development and Environment, Forum for short. And I will be moderating today's panel. I'm just going to check my notes so I don't pronounce any names wrong. So we have Per-Erik Schulze here from the Norwegian Nature Conservancy, Society for Conservation of Nature. And I will also welcome Tor Glistrup from, he's formerly with the Norwegian Directorate for Fisheries, where he has worked for 25 years with resource control, both nationally and internationally. And for 5 years, he was the leader of the intelligence project Fish Crime Working Group under Interpol. And last but not least, Mahfoud Bekri, who's the coordinator of Western Sahara is not from for sale. He's joining us directly from the Sahrawi refugee camps in Algeria. So please join us here on stage. So, to put this a little bit into context, I would like to start off by asking you, Mahfoud. You're joining us more or less straight from the Sahrawi refugee camps in Algeria. And I was wondering, could you give us a little bit of context on why is this fishery issue such a big deal? And yeah, why should we focus on that?
Well, first of all, thank you. Yeah, for us Sahrawis, when it comes to resources and especially fish, this is a very problematic issue because it has basically to do with the prolonging the suffering of the Sahrawi people, the occupation, coming from the refugee camps. But half of my people, including some family members, are in the occupied territories. So basically, this is problematic because this is a business that is basically owned and being run by the occupation force, basically. So Sahrawis in the occupied territories has nothing to do with the fish, which is basically being administered by the Moroccan force in the occupied territories. Sahrawis are denied access to their natural resources and have never been asked about whether they consent or no these resources to be taken and for companies and for countries to be involved in this. So this is basically problematic because Morocco, the occupying power in Western Sahara, has been exploiting together with some multinational companies the resources of Sahara. It's not only fish. Morocco is considered, by the way, the biggest producer of fish in Africa, and 80% of the fish that Morocco produces outside, especially to Europe, and particularly also, I mean, thanks to some deals with the European Union, this fishing, I mean, 80% of it is happening in Western Sahara. And the UN, as Eric mentioned before, recognizes the Western Sahara as the last a colony of Africa, and basically the Court of Justice of the European Union also has ruled in 6 times now, and we're waiting very soon the 7th, that the resources of Sahrawis could not be basically exploited unless the consent of the Sahrawi people is given. So no consent of the Sahrawi people has been given to this exploitation and to this fishing operation in occupied Western Sahara. This means that basically the all these operations, including the fish operations and all these vessels that are operating now in Western Sahara, whatever, I mean, the origin is, they are doing it in illegal way that basically undermines Sahrawi rights, and in a way also it's contributing to not only cementing this occupation and prolonging the conflict, but also they are being complicit with the very grave violations of human rights in the occupied Western Sahara that many international big companies have been documenting.
Thank you. We mentioned, or I mentioned briefly, that you came here from the refugee camps. Some of you are very well familiar with the situation in Western Sahara and for the Sahrawis in exile, but in case some here are not that familiar with the issues, could you maybe tell us a little bit about the camps and the situation, just to give some context as to why?
Yeah. Of course, as I said before, I think when we speak about Western Sahara, I mean, we obviously refer to the conflict that is under occupation now, but sometimes we forget that half of the Sahrawi people that are originally from this territory, from Western Sahara, were obliged to flee from their territory back in 1975. And between those who were obliged to flee is my family. I mean, thousands of families have been obliged to seek refuge after the annexation and the military occupation of Morocco to Western Sahara, and they set up basically five refugee camps. I do live in and was born basically together with all my generation and even the generation before it. It's now four generations that we basically were born and know nothing more than the being a refugee basically, and was raised in a refugee camp. The situation have always been extreme because this is one of the harshest deserts. It's very difficult, basically, environment conditions. Temperatures in these camps may, in the summer, reach sometimes 60 degrees, and life there is very, very basically harsh. So the Sahrawis are depending totally on humanitarian aid, and there has been a lot of cuts in this humanitarian aid since basically the last years. Just some months ago, the Sahrawi Red Crescent, but also UN agencies and international organizations in the camps have issued several appeals asking international community for more funding to this refugee situation, where basic needs like food, but also hospitals like health, education, and other very needed assistance to those refugees is coming from international aid. So it's really a paradox that those refugees who are pending this humanitarian aid and they are failing, basic international humanitarian organizations are failing to get this aid because there is no interest, but the same countries are those who are basically benefiting from the resources of those same refugees. An example for this is that only the disposal fish of one of the vessels that our colleague here has been speaking about is, I mean, equals the fish that Sahrawi refugees have been getting for the whole year. So approximately 10,000 tons of disposal, which is the fish dumped in the ocean, equals the fish that Sahrawis used to get. Now they are obviously no longer getting because of the lack of resources. But it's really interesting to see basically the hypocrisy of the world also, while refugees and international organizations are failing to get this very little amount of money to force the survival of the refugees. The same countries basically are dealing in an illegal way with the occupation to get these people resources without any consent of them and in contrary of international law.
That really is a very big paradox. So that was a very close look on the issue of the Western Sahara and the fisheries. So now let's zoom out a little bit, and I'll ask Tor to maybe give us a crash course in what is really, because when I sat down with this report, I was like, wow, there's a lot I don't know about international fisheries. I know that quite often we get into trouble because we overfish. But I really didn't know that much about their regulations, the lack of regulations, and all the illegal things that are going on. So could you maybe just give us a crash course? What is happening on the international fisheries scene, mostly the illegal parts?
Thank you.
But first, I need to express the gratitude of the work and initiative that you have produced there, because I think it's very good. And also for those who have financed it, if they are present. I think this is, I'm very sure this has this is an initiative might bring forward a good political discussion, because this thematic of export of overcapacity in the northern area of Europe has, of course, been a problem for a long time, but it's peace and one piece. Now somebody took care of the totality of it and presented very good in this report. That's my obligation to inform you on. When it comes to the massive task of working against IUU, illegal, unreported, unregistered catches in the world, you saw 70,000 fishing vessels. They have the capacity to empty the seas if there are not regulations, which there are now in the economical zones of most countries, but of course in West Africa, they are poor, they don't have coast guards. If they did have that, things would change. And I could just point out to another NGO, Sea Shepherd, Paul Watson's organization. They have been working on whaling, of course. Some years ago, we had the world's largest hunt on at all times for 110 days. They hunted one of the Bandit Six that Interpol engaged with in this project some years back. And we managed to destroy those six. And we had a lot of help from Sea Shepherd, actually, because they were the only one seagoing activity who wanted to engage with them. And luckily not with violence. From the issue of the Patagonian toothfish in the Antarctic, they followed this vessel up to it, were synced at the Guinea Bay at 4,000 meters depth. And the thing is, both those vessels engaged were former Norwegians, of course, because Bob Barker, to Sea Shepherd, is a former Norwegian fishing vessel and a former Coast Guard vessel. So that was a good thing happening with the steel coming from Norway. On the other side, it was Tundra, which was run by Amadora's family in Galicia. It was a very well-known thing in Spain, but one of the best achievements we had was that Spain had to engage with them, with this seriously, because of this hunt. But it takes a long time to tell you all about that, but it's important to know about that. And if you Google Tundra, you will find a book on it, on the hunt. In our world, we have, as you said, 87% of the stocks are depleted or near to be depleted. There are too many fishing vessels in this world, and the need for protein from the sea is increasing. We have some nations who are, in my point of view, the bad guys. Norway has no big history for fisheries except for the whaling, where we were the crooks. Nowadays, it's China, it's Taiwan, it's South Korea, Japan, Spain, Russia, who are the big nations, having fleets going around the world. 24/7, 36/5, and that's a huge reason to be worried, because China and others in the Far East have depleted their stocks, So they are increasingly looking for more resources to feed the public. So this is a huge task, and Norway has done a lot, but it is needed a lot heavier engagement on this, which I can come back to when we end what to be done further. Today, Norway is heavily involved with something called Blue Justice, and they had a meeting, high-level meeting in Copenhagen in the middle of March. I'm not sure what's the outcome there, but when it comes to the challenge, the far fleet fisheries are a main topic, I mean. But you must be aware, 60% of the surface of this Earth, which should actually be called Mother Ocean, is international waters, and there are no international police policing this. And there has to be done something there, and that's possible. There's a lot of philanthropes around this world who are now willing to invest in these kind of activities. So hopefully, if you get their motors to involve with their economic capacities, we could move really further. But of course, it is a lot of politics difficult to engage with. The usual thing is, when it comes to IUU, is the illegal thing usually goes for the regulations in the economical zone of a country. And countries are mostly engaged in their own. They have more than enough to keep up with their own economic zones. And there are too little focus and capacity to involve for the 60%. In my mind, most of this are, of course, economical crime. But there is not the right understanding, to my mind, because today, around the world, fisheries management systems, they tend to only think about their own fishery regulations, but actually much of this, also in Norway, and we have cases on that, it actually should be prosecuted from the ordinary straffelov, prosecution, alminnelig borgerlig straffelov. Takk. So, there is capacity in the northern area for the developed countries to take care of their resources, but of course in the developing countries there are poor possibilities to really engage with that. And you have shown a lot of fishery activities, but they are not there for the fish, they are for the money, of course. And fishing quotas at sea are money in the bank. When somebody wants to make it difficult to be detected as the operators, they change their identities on the vessels. They use Belize, a convenient flagged states. And there is a growing concern on the activity in that area, of course. They land, they fish legally, report some of the catch, and do not report a part of it, maybe 20%. That's often the activity that those who have a permit to fish do. Another thing is that they fish and leave the economical zone and go into international waters and go to the high-risk activity, which is transshipment at seas. This is something we have had a huge task with back from 2002 with the Russian fleet in the Barents Sea. And we fought that by an intelligence operations up to 2007. And then transshipment was the operational system of the Russian fishing fleet. The fishing vessel fish transship to a transporting reefer, which goes to the port. And that is the high risk activity in the world, has been actually for since quotas were established for the fishing fleets. Yes, maybe I should stop there. Thank you.
Thank you. And then last, I wanted to ask you, Per Erik, as a marine biologist, because now we've been talking about a lot of politics and regulations, but to take it down to the more practical level, what does this illegal fishing, the unregulated fishing, do to the fish population? And will the ocean be completely black? No more fish?
Yeah. No, I mean, we are sitting now in Oslo, and many of us used to go fishing when we were young, but we cannot do at the moment in this part of the country. And there are several factors here, of course, some pollution and some climate change, but there has also been overfishing. So we should have learned something just by outside our our door kind of thing. And it's quite scary when the fish disappears. We have some big experiences from, in Norway, always talk about the herring, right? We managed to fish it down, so it collapsed. And a big economy around it, and a lot of food just disappeared. And the Canadians did the same with their cod. And they were supposed to be among the world's best fishery management systems, right? Yeah. And it collapsed, and it has not come back, recovered. So it takes maybe tens of years to get some of it back if it first collapses. So it's really a scary what can happen. And also, fish is often treated like numbers, you know. That's a classical story. We humans, we like to number, and we have volumes and so on. And it's in particular when it comes to fish. But I mean, they are living beings. They have a behavior, for example. They decide where they want to be. Often fish wants to be with other fish. So when it gets very few of them, they will gather on the last spawning ground, many of them. So often the coastal fisheries, the coastal fishermen, the coastal people, they will see it before the commercial fisheries is getting less and less fish. But the big vessels, they will still be able to go on the spawning ground and get the last fish if they like to. So it's actually, we have to stop it before it collapses. And often fish stocks are much more, people tend to think that fish are everywhere and swim everywhere, but they are not. They are connected to some certain feature, you know, if it's a fjord in Norway or maybe some special sandbanks in Africa. And this stock tends to gather in a certain spot. And the locals would know about where those spots are, right? So we can actually fish out the local fish and it disappears.
That's a very scary image. And we are today, we're talking about, I would say, a catastrophe happening right before our eyes on the coast of Western Africa. But it's happening with Norwegian vessels. And from your experience, Tor, what would you say is the Norwegian responsibility in this issue, both legally and morally, if you want to venture to the moral grounds or moral high grounds, if you want?
Actually, I didn't mean anything about this a week ago. Because I'm here as a substitute for Trygmar Trekking, Gunnar Album's organization, the late Gunnar Album, which I happen to know. Yes, from my point of view, it's quite worrying, and I'm very sorry that our department, the fishery department, does not respond to the request that has been raised on this, and it indicates how it is and how it has been. They really, I have to see, because it's me too earlier, we didn't take this seriously. We didn't think in that aspect. If somebody asked us to do it, yes, one might have done that. But I can tell you that my work, we did do a substantial analysis looking for Norwegian engagement in Africa some time back. Not so much on the specific fishing vessels, but the thing here is then anyway that it is one vessel down. The only one who reports on this is Fiskeribladet, but that's kind of the small community of fishermen who read, and not so many others. These vessels have for many, many years been used to catch fish in our economic zone. And the fishermen who owns them have had free quotas, which indicates that they couldn't do this business and they couldn't sell this ship without having access to quotas. And those quotas are, according to the Havressurslova, paragraph 1, says that the fish in the sea is all the community's property. It's not the fishermen's. They are given this for free. So in a way, you could say that is that a right thing to then sell these steel to go stealing somewhere else? I think not. And from my point of view, these vessels should have been introduced and given to those countries who do not have a coast guard, and they could use it for coast guard work instead. So to the ethics in it, there are no ethics in it. It's wrong. But the general thinking has been that this is the fishermen's; they can sell it free around the world, and government haven't really taken an interest. No, I hope they will, because this is a good report.
Thank you, Mahfoud. Tor here mentions the national Norwegian regulation on natural resources and how it starts with the resources of the sea belongs to the people. As someone coming from the Sahrawi civil society, how do you see this? How does the civil society and the people of Western Sahara feel or reflect on the fact that people get rich on our people's resources and then they plunder yours?
Yeah, it's really very, very sad and disappointed because we can see how our resources are being used basically to finance basically and to make the occupation last forever. So I mean the money that is coming to basically finance the military Moroccan occupation is coming from what is Sahrawi people's property, including those, I mean, in the refugee camps, because at the end of the day, they're also coming from this. So, I mean, the resources in general, I mean, not only the fish, like just 2 days ago, Western Sahara Resource Watch had issued its annual report about the phosphate mineral, which is very important aspect also of resources in Western Sahara, and that shows how also this mineral is being basically exploited and illegally sold out of Western Sahara. But speaking particularly of the fish, this is a business that is particularly being used by Morocco to reward basically the military in particular. For example, if you look at page 2 of this report, you can see one of the big vessels that are, I mean, Norwegian vessels that is in Western Sahara and is now Omar Benani's property, who's one of the Moroccan generals. So in a way, it's being used by Morocco, by the occupation regime, in order to cement basically the military occupation. It's also being used as a way to attract settlers, in contrary obviously of international law. And the situation and reality of Western Sahara now is totally different from that of 1975, when the occupation first started. Basically now for each Sahrawi we have 5 or 6 settlers, so Sahrawis became a minority in their own homeland. And fishing sector is particularly being used for that, because the fishing licenses that the Moroccan occupation forces and the Moroccan occupation the administration gives, I mean, it's used for this, basically to reward, but also to push Moroccans to come from the north of Morocco in order to settle in Western Sahara as a way to try to change this demographic nature of the territory. See, this is so the reality now. All the companies now in Western Sahara, the fish that work in the fish companies, they are all Moroccan, and we hardly. Basically, there are almost no Sahrawis working in this company. So it's also a way of the Moroccan occupation to undermine Sahrawis and to marginalize them. In addition to this, I mean, this fish, I mean, some of it is very good quality fish, like the ones we find in Dakhla, for example, in the octopus, and other very basically high quality fish, let's say. I mean, some Sahrawis, not only those in the refugee camps who have never basically seen or tasted the fish, but even those in the occupied territories, they have never tasted some fish as well. So this is basically also used to international export and to be sold out. So there are lots of obviously consequences of this fishing industry in Western Sahara, and one of the most important, I mean, negative impact of that is the environmental one, because I've mentioned this before, but I think it's a very important aspect. I mean, all those vessels, I mean, dump and dispose a lot of that fish, which obviously result in a very environmental damage. In addition to obviously the emissions of those vessels. So, as a civil society, I mean, Sahrawis have always gone to streets in order to ask, obviously, and claim their natural right for self-determination. This is obviously faced by torture, by prisons, by human rights violation. As I said, I mean, many organizations have documented this, but particularly they have also come out in several occasions in order to ask Morocco in first hand, but also those international companies and international government to cease and to stop the involvement in plundering their natural resources, because as I said, it is seen as a way to basically make this occupation stronger and to finance it and to make it. And obviously also it undermines the UN role in the conflict, because if countries, if states are dealing with Morocco, with the occupying state, with the resources of Western Sahara, they are in a way accepting and endorsing the occupation. So what incentive Morocco is getting basically to engage in a serious and credible peace efforts that the UN is undertaking. So we have rejected this, and we are now being more mobilized also to especially tackle those companies and target them who are being basically complicit with the Moroccan occupation when it comes to the exploitation and the plunder of natural resources.
Yeah, just a question, because I work with Norwegian marine biology usually, but there has been some kind of international boycott of engaging with businesses in occupied Western Sahara, hasn't it? Norway has had some boycott. So I'm just sitting here thinking about how come these vessels have turned up in this with these companies from Norway to there. If there is a boycott, how does it work?
I do not know a lot about that, but from earlier days, it has always been Norwegian policy to stay off from West Sahara. That's my meaning. But step by step, things changes, and nobody has really cared and looked into it. That's my understanding.
I think one of the few countries, if it's not the only, and I really think it's an example, is that Norway basically asks businesses and companies to stay away from investing from Western Sahara. And this is something very important, and it's to our knowledge. However, there are still some like businesses in Norway, in occupied Western Sahara. And what we think should happen is that there should be some kind of regulation that bans those companies from investing or from going to unoccupied territory. But we definitely think this is a step that Norway has taken that some other countries should do, because most of the, especially in Europe, most of the European countries, they did totally the contrary, which is they are even pushing their businesses and their companies to invest in Western Sahara, because this is, a result of the bilateral relations they have with Morocco, and this is what Morocco is asking for. So one of the most important, basically, things that Morocco asks countries for is to find a way to legitimize Morocco's occupation to Western Sahara. So some countries don't dare to basically say it very loudly that they recognize basically this occupation, but they still do it in different ways. And one of the ways they do it through is through businesses. There are plenty of French like businesses and companies in Western Sahara, Spanish companies in Western Sahara, and the government are doing absolutely nothing to impede this. So it's really knowledgeable that Norway has done this step to warn the companies to stay away from Western Sahara. But definitely, we really need more steps forward in this. To punish even those who dare to basically, to violate international law and invest in occupied Western Sahara.
Yeah, just a follow-up thought, because we have some of us remember that there was a president of Norwegian Business Association, NHO, had to leave his position some years ago because he actually was doing business with importing fish oil and fish meal from Western Sahara through falsifying some papers, so it looked like it was from somewhere else. And it even looked like it was another product, right? It was something with for human purpose or animal feed.
And it was one in my group who actually worked on that, using the tracking system to document. And so Mr. Reba had to leave his office. It says something about, yes, we don't like it, officially anyway.
So, what we have, Erik and I decided not to look into who owns these ships. But, now we have the list, and I really hope someone would look into who owns the ship, who benefits from it. And I'm actually, the experience is that often it is still Norwegian interests in some of these vessels, even if they are flagged out. So I think we should look
into it together, maybe.
I think one of the aspects that also I think the report mentioned is that you mentioned this also before, is that some of the vessels that are operating now in Mauritania, particularly in Wadibou, they sometimes do also some trips to Western Sahara. So we basically might be importing without knowing some of the fish, and especially also fish oil from Wadibou, but also from Tantan, which is not Western Sahara but Morocco. But we all know that all the fish coming from Morocco and originally from Morocco, I mean, most probably is coming from Western Sahara, because as we said before, the percentage of the fishing operations in that Morocco does, 80% of them are done from Western Sahara. So it's very important for Norway and for Norwegian businesses also to look into this important aspect and to look into better traceability when it comes to products, particularly coming from Wadibou, from Mauritania, and from Tantan in Morocco, because they might be originally from Western Sahara.
Yeah, and if I could add something positive in that. In the report, I mentioned Ocean Fresh. That's a production vessel from Norway. It's still a Norwegian flagged vessel, at the time in Oman, according to AIS. But anyway, Ocean Fresh has been reported from Directorate of Fisheries for unreporting of catch, huge amount, and I have special knowledge on that because I worked with that case. And at the time being, we are waiting for a new court at the next level. They were sentenced in the first court, but the withdrawal of the value of the unreported fish was only 3.6 million and not 57 million as it should be, and that's the question now in the higher court. This is only the easy case for the police, because what's really at stake here, we never got hold of, because we tried to have Ireland to go into a company called Atlantic Dawn, which is the main part owner of this, and unluckily, they ended up saying that we cannot do anything, and that's show some of the problem in the world, because there are unbalance between countries, how they really look on this and how they react on it, and the person that took the wrong decision, not be agreeing with me and some of her own staff, has now become the chief of Europe Surveillance and Control Agency. So. Well, and there are a lot of things here you could look into and be a bit worried on. Thank you.
Thank you. We're getting close to the end, and we promised that we would open for questions from the floor. In interest of time, I ask you to keep it very short, preferably 1 minute-ish, and maybe someone can assist me in passing the mic. I think you might... No, it's quite long, so maybe it's possible.
Thank you. My name is Michael. I've been working with African issues for about 20 years, and I've also been working for the Norwegian government, responsible for coordinating international information regarding everything that has to do with food, including fisheries, import-export, the byproduct, animal byproducts from fish and seafood, which is also a very large business in Western Sahara. I was working with the European Commission. The Norwegian government, of course, does not have a role in the European Parliament, but in the European Commission, Norway is an extremely active part. We have representatives there every single day. We are working in the working groups in the European Commission, developing the international legislation regarding these issues. And I've also been coordinating information with other multilateral institutions like the UN FAO Codex, which are working with these issues. And of course, there's a lot of different areas, but when it comes to everything that has to do with fish, who do you think the world listens to? They look to Norway, and Norway is heading a lot of the work that is being done internationally regarding everything that has to do with fish, which means that we in Norway have an opportunity to set the standards of whatever we're talking about, if it's regulation, systems, policies, however we relate to anything that has to do with fish. And in the Norwegian Parliament, this is the issues of Western Sahara is actually one of the few things that all the political parties are in agreement about. So it's worth looking into making some demands to our Norwegian authorities.
Hi, my name is Helene Bank. I'm chairperson of the Norwegian Trade Campaign. And I have a question and a comment, because I see that in one way, you know, Norway is present all places. We can tell how we have done things. But what the UN did was actually to ask the World Trade Organization to discipline subsidies for IUU and overcapacity in the fleet. And this is a totally wrong place to do it, because this is a place where they do compete over market and resource access, and not actually to manage the systems here. And that means in many ways, my assessment is that even there, Norway seem to be more willing to protect the World Trade Organization against collapses than actually to stand firm on what sort of regulations are needed to reduce overcapacity. And in this term here, I see, okay, who benefit from it? You know, it is the next task. I see that you couldn't write anything, everything, but who owns these fleets, who benefit from it? And also, when Norway sell these boats, they contribute at the moment to IUU fishing and to the overcapacity. And that means some of the steps here, maybe it is that you have one local, one Western, you know, person, as we had on the whale fleets, to see actually where do they fish, how much do they fish, that we need to do this and actually to ensure that many of these fleets go out of business now. They are part of an overcapacity. And I think that at the moment, the UN is almost stuck by giving a wrong organization a task that it cannot and will not do. So that that work there doesn't function, haven't functioned for tens of years now. Thank you.
Thank you. Then I'll leave it to the panel to respond to the comments, and then
Trying to bring some positivity into it, because what we see in Western Africa is that local governments and fishery authorities work closely together, several countries, and also with fishery intelligence people from, for example, Norway, both in the private ones and because there is actually private fishery intelligence companies and foundations, and some of these are even based in Norway, like the Trygmat Tracking, which is quite impressive. And they are doing training camps to actually make fishery management better everywhere, but in particular, for example, in Western Africa. I think that's a good starting point, and we know that Norwegian government, they like to contribute positively to this development. So it's actually, we have to bridge these things, of course. Yeah, that's like what you're saying. I don't care where you do it, actually. I'm more pragmatical. I'm not a politician, you know. I just want it to happen. So if some people in Norwegian government can do something about these vessels and over exporting overcapacity, it would be a nice thing. And I think it's quite easy. It could happen quite fast. As I mean, we have spent some weeks and we have tracked down these vessels. If someone is asked to spend some more weeks, we know who owns this, who benefits, if they have quotas or not. And you could actually probably bring a case in FAO or EU or whatever and say this is actually illegal and this is not, and so on. So, but someone has to do this job.
I totally agree and hope that the Directorate of Fisheries and Analytical Unit in Vardø will be engaged in this, because they are one of the best in the world. So if somebody give them the task, they will bring this forward, I'm sure. When it comes to how to, what should be done, to who should do something about this, yes, there is a lot of activity. There are, I think, nearly 60 regional fishing monitoring organizations in the world. That sounds impressive, but they are more arenas to compete on who is going to have the biggest quota, and not so much control related. I would also like to mention that some years ago, Stimson organization in Washington, which is another NGO, they made a report pointing out and identifying 300 different activities, initiatives at the ocean related to resources, mainly fisheries. And they pointed out that it's very little coordination. And actually, as a small politician in Bergen, I managed to put a suggestion into the pocket of Mr. Jonas Gahr Støre in opposition, but it never came further, because what the world needs is, like we have in Norway, we have the Barents Watch. You might have heard of it, you might not. Barents Watch is 11 people who produce systems, and they use Soprasteria's energy here to produce perhaps the world's best analytical system. But that's internal for the 8-9 organizations in Norway with the responsibility at sea, and they work good on this. It has also been used internationally, but we have Barents Watch. The world needs World Ocean Watch. And if you can help me to promote that idea in where you happen to be, because there are huge dubious activities that I could have shown you from the new website of Skylight, which is Allen Institute using AI to identify risks all over the world automatically. And so that is additional to Global Fishing Watch. So there are actually competition out there to be the best one with the best platform. But what we need is World Ocean Watch. Norway could start it, bring in the Five Eyes, any other good organization in the country who really wants to take part in this and develop it to an international thing under the UN. Thank you.
Yeah. Now, I really think, I mean, the role of Norway, I mean, is something to applaud in many ways. And I think, especially in the European Union, I mean, this, especially in Western Sahara, I mean, question, because it's so relevant. It's also, I mean, so something that basically is coming to the general debate everywhere in the European Union. I think that Norway should take a leadership on that, on basically defending ethics and defending how things should go. It's my first time to Norway. I hope, I wish, I had to come to celebrate something that Norway has done the best, basically. For example, a sanction over Morocco to Morocco over its occupation of Western Sahara. However, unfortunately, I had to come to basically speak about this phenomenon. I just hope there are some measures that are taken that, in the future, that these kind of phenomena will not occur again, that some vessels, for example, end up basically supporting a military occupation, as it is the case of the 8 vessels, Norwegian vessels, that ended up in operating now in Western Sahara and owned by the Moroccan occupation. And there is also another aspect, very briefly, which is, I think, very important when it comes to also Norway's performance, which is an important program, the Fridtjof Nansen program that Norway is supporting, and I think it's very important because it has to do with building the capacity of especially East African countries to manage the fish, but also to assess and to have some data and investigation on this. This is important. However, it's unfortunately failing in Western Sahara because this program particularly is not, at least mentioning Western Sahara, is not respecting international law when it comes to Western Sahara, and it's dealing with Western Sahara as it's part of Morocco, and even the master students that basically this program is supporting and building the capacity of are all Moroccans. So they have no mention, they have also no treatment, direct treatment of Sahrawi. So I really think this program should reconsider its paper, I mean its role in particularly Western Sahara, because in a way it's also undermining Norway's reputation and Norway's government effort. So it should really be done in the right way, which is approaching the Sahrawis, the representative, the legitimate representative of Sahrawis, and also having it clear that Western Sahara has nothing to do with Morocco. We all know that Morocco is an occupying power and the de facto administration, but obviously when it comes to giving such a kind of legality, it could be understood that Norway is in a way supporting also the Moroccan occupation through this. So I think it's also important for this program to reflect, and it's really serious that they even don't mention Western Sahara and they don't treat it separately from Morocco.
Thank you. We're unfortunately at the end of our time.
I mean, the first obvious thing is to become member of Naturvernforbund or Støttekomiteen for Vest-Sahara. But I mean also this crowd sourcing of information. I mean, these maps are out there now, and this list is here. Anyone can go out and try to figure out what these boats are doing and send us some information, and we'll work on it together. So that's at least part of it. I have no other idea just now.
Support, stop illegal fishing.
I think ordinary people obviously could play an important role. I think there are a lot of campaigns, I mean, to engage with, and especially to ask, I mean, the government, starting from local government, to basically put more pressure for those who have the decision in order to make it right. So in this regard, here in Norway, I would refer you obviously to the West Sahara Committee's support, because they are basically doing a lot of action and a lot of activities and practical activities that people can engage with, so obviously they can make their voices heard and they can denounce this kind of situation.
Thank you very much. Now we actually have to end because the time is up. I'm sorry. I would like to thank all the panelists for your contributions and for this report. And I would also like to lend my support to the statements to become a member of an organization that works on these issues. It's not just about the membership fee, it's really about a power in numbers. When people organize, it puts pressure behind the demands and it makes it possible to have these events, to do these reports. And also, take a report home. If you have friends over, bring it out, hope that you still have friends after talking about fishing vessel export in a social setting. Spread the message. That's really what I would like everyone to do, but in an appropriate amount. So thank you very much for joining us today, and I hope that you all will go in and follow and like all the organizations today in all the social media to keep an eye out for the next event in this series and in other relevant topics. And I have a gift for our esteemed panel, and it's a book for each of you. And funnily enough, I actually just finished reading this book, so we can have a book club. So this is the book Paradise by Abdul Razak Gurna, the Nobel Prize winner. I highly recommend it for everyone who has not yet read it. There are some fish in it and some coastal societies in Africa. So thank you for joining us today and have a nice evening.